inside the works to monitor the transporter bridge. It's a structure that has stood tall over Teesside for the last 114 years, and 6 years after it closed, engineers remain committed to returning this icon to its former glory. The transporter bridge has arguably been the most recognisable landmark of the region since it opened in 1911, connecting both sides of the River Tees. But it has been closed since 2019 due to safety concerns, sparking fears it may never carry cars from Middlesbrough to Port Clarence again. Since 2019, various inspections and assessments have been carried out, and the landmark is now under a continuous monitoring programme. There are currently more than 100 sensors tracking its movement, tilt angles, temperature, pressure, wind speed and direction, and tidal conditions at key points. Laser scanning techniques using drones have also been used to understand the difference between when it was designed and its true condition today. Teams have scoured through more than 1,000 historical documents of the original designs of the bridge to help create accurate dimensional information to influence repairs. But despite all of the work ongoing to find an answer to its issues and long-term future, without funding, the plans proposed may not be able to go ahead. Around £1.77 million has been spent on emergency works, surveys, assessments, repairs, lighting, and the installation of digital monitoring since its closure. The costs have been shared between Middlesbrough Council, which takes the lead on managing the bridge, and Stockton Council, which is responsible for Newport Bridge. Once preliminary design for the refurbishment is complete, the future of the bridge will then be in the hands of others, as the councils cannot afford to solely foot the bill. The engineer said a cocktail of funding would be needed to save the bridge, and although they were unable to put a figure on it just yet, it will likely be north of the £30 million previously agreed by the Department of Transport. The councils will only have access to this £30 million fee if the bridge is brought back into use too. Meaning, if it were to remain as a landmark, they would not have this pot of cash to play with. The transporter bridge is one of only 24 transporter bridges worldwide and the sixth largest, with only 13 of these still standing to this day. Construction first began in 1909, and it opened 2 years later with a total length of 850 feet and a clearance below of 160 feet. It became a reroute for ships up the river, access that is still required to this day. It was awarded its listed status in 1985 and was given a heritage plaque by the Institute of Mechanical Engineers in 1993, with its visitor centre opening in 2000. Many have argued that it must be restored and kept moving, as opposed to being turned into a stationary landmark. A preliminary design for the refurb is set to be completed in the middle of next year, with engineers saying they should then have a much clearer idea of what can and can't be done. It is this stage when a decision will be made whether to keep it as a working structure or to preserve it as a historic monument and visitor attraction. The council then expects refurbishment works to begin in 2027, with repairs focusing on strengthening the towers, replacing backstay cables and other steelworks repairs. It is hoped the work would be done by 2032, 13 years after it was closed to the public.
Bishop Auckland Rugby Club fundraiser tops £9,000 after flooding. Bishop Auckland Rugby Club was left heartbroken after the River Weir burst its banks and flooded its pitches with water earlier this month. Just days after the flooding, the club was dealt with another blow when vandals on off-road bikes forced their way onto the playing fields and tore up the grass. A fundraiser has previously launched, hoping to raise £15,000, and so far the drive has managed to gather an impressive £9,001, thanks to the support of nearly 300 people. You can donate to the fundraiser at the GoFundMe website, Fundraiser by Gwyn Evans, Our Rugby Club is Underwater. General Manager Stephen Jones vowed the money will be put to good use to restore the pitches to full capacity as quickly as possible. He said the fundraiser has been fantastic. We never expected to raise anywhere near as much, let alone £9,000. And it's not just the money, it's the support from other clubs who rung up and said we can use their facilities free of charge. That has saved us so much money during this time. We are so grateful for everyone's support. Mr. Jones said despite getting one pitch back in use last weekend, the club very much remains at a standstill until they can properly drain the other pitches. He added, "We managed to get one pitch up and running again for the first team, which is brilliant, so we resumed that last weekend. But we can only play on it for a limited time, otherwise it will too get damaged. We're just waiting for good weather so we can get the tractor on the pitches, put the spikes on the floor and drain it. Once we do that, we could be back up and running as normal. But we can't as the ground's too soft at the moment. It's frustrating as we want to get the kids back playing on our pitches as soon as we can. Our hands are tied at the moment." However, Mr. Jones said due to the horrendous weather forecast approaching, all matches scheduled for this weekend have now been cancelled. The cancellations over the last few weeks has meant the club has stopped receiving its much-needed revenue. He said, "All the kids playing at junior level still have to play off-site. We're still feeling the same effects. The revenue has stopped coming in, and we're counting the cost on that, really. It's just all a bit frantic and hectic at the minute." And despite the progress made, the club manager said he doubts the club will be back to full use until the new year. He added, "If I'm honest, we head into the Christmas break in 3 or 4 weeks' time. It's looking like it's going to be January when we can come back to full service. It's frustrating because the water has subsided. We're not far away. We just need to get the machinery on. We just need one dry week. I know how much the club means to the kids, and I worry about them, as we all rely on our rugby community so much."
Morrison's announces major change in 300 UK stores next year. Bauer Media Outdoors, BMO, will install digital media screens for the supermarket chain, with these playing a rotation of adverts designed to support the shopping experience. Once these have been built, they will be sold jointly by BMO and Morrison's full-service retail media agency, MMG. Discussing its new partnership with the retailer, Richard Bond, Managing Director at Bauer Media Outdoors, BMO, said outdoor media is a great way to help people find the products they love. He said, "Securing this exciting new partnership with Morrison's represents another significant moment for the role of out-of-home media in the wider UK retail media ecosystem. With perfectly positioned screens at store entrances nationwide, we're creating unmissable opportunities for brands to connect with millions of shoppers at the precise moment purchase decisions are being made. This comes as Morrison's moves further and further into the digital world, rolling out a new digital labelling system, as well as new delivery service called Morrisons Now. The latter is designed to bring fresh groceries to customers in just 1 hour. The service will be available online to shoppers living close to one of the 420 supermarkets operated by the brand. At the moment, Morrisons Now is only available at 158 stores, with this number set to increase in the coming weeks and months. Customers can order up to 30 items at a time, with a minimum spend of at least £15 required.
Redhall Primary School launched Christmas Swap Shop. Redhall Primary School in Darlington has announced the return of its Christmas Jumper Swap Shop, a scheme designed to ensure no child goes without this winter. Pupils are invited to bring in last year's jumper and exchange it for a new one in their size this year. In a post on Facebook, the school said the project is designed to support parents and carers at a time of year that can be both wonderful and challenging, helping to cut costs while also reducing waste. Families without a jumper to trade will still be able to choose from one from the shop, thanks to generous donations, with just a small contribution asked via the school's donation tin. The school is also inviting people to donate any spare jumpers directly to the office to help keep the swap shop stocked.
Santa and elves take over Hopetown Museum, Darlington. A magical Christmas season has hit Hopetown as Santa officially touches down in Darlington. From November 29th through to Christmas Eve, the historic railway site has been transformed into a sparkling winter wonderland packed with festive activities for families to explore. The star of this year's celebrations is an immersive, family-friendly trail, the Elves Giftworks, set around the museum's replica Locomotion No. 1, which has been reimagined as part of a Christmas railway town. As families wander through the route, they'll discover twinkling lights and themed displays and elves hard at work preparing for the big day. Letter writing stations will be placed throughout the route, with a direct postbox to Santa, where children can post their Christmas wish lists. Some letters may go missing on the trail, but families can embark on a hunt for those, making sure they all make their way to Father Christmas. The Elves Giftworks runs daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. There's even the chance to meet Santa's reindeer, who are getting ready for their Christmas Eve flight. Santa's Grotto will be open on Saturdays and Sundays throughout December, Monday the 22nd of December and Tuesday the 23rd of December. Tickets for Santa's Grotto are sold separately from general entry and the festive trail. Alongside the Elves Giftworks trail, Hopetown's wider Christmas programme includes children's rides, storytelling sessions, Christmas-themed workshops, and the site will be decked out with Victorian and seasonal decorations. General entry to the site remains free, but activities such as the trail, grotto, and rides require individual tickets. Tickets for children aged 1 and over cost £5. Adults enter for £1. Full details, including dates and availability, for Santa's Grotto are listed on Hopetown's website.
Teesdale man refused to give a breath test after driving into a ditch. A retired property developer who drove into a ditch returning from a pub left his car and walked the rest of the way home, a court has told. Andrew William Moss was spotted walking away with his dog after the crash, but when police arrived at his home later and asked him to perform a breathalyzer test, he refused, saying he had drunk whiskey before going to bed. Peterlee magistrates were told that arriving home at Thringarth near Middleton in Teesdale, the 61-year-old drank some whiskey and went to bed, but woke up to find a police officer shining a torch into his bedroom. He was said to appear to be heavily intoxicated and was asked to perform a breath test, which he refused to comply with, as he was unhappy police had entered his home, even though he had left his door open. Marcus Blakelock, prosecuting, said the police went to the address in Nook Lane as a witness in the road incident described seeing a man with a small dog leaving the car. A check on the police national computer found the vehicle to be registered to the defendant and, on going to his home, the officer found a small dog at the property. The defendant admitted failing to provide a breath specimen for analysis on Sunday, October the 19th. Adrian Irons, in mitigation, said no other vehicle were involved and no one was injured. His last conviction was 24 years ago, and he has no convictions of a similar nature or anything involving alcohol. Mr. Irons said the defendant consumed a significant amount of Jura whiskey after getting home and before going to bed. He thought he would be over the limit because of that and thought he would make it worse for himself if he provided the sample. I have pointed out to him that is not the case. He understands now, but in common with most people without legal experience, he didn't know that then. Mr. Irons said after remaining alcohol-free for many months, the defendant resumed drinking following a difficult period in his personal life, including two bereavements and a marriage breakup, but since the incident hadn't touched alcohol. Mr. Irons, since moving to Teesdale and renovating a dilapidated barn 8 or 9 years ago, the defendant had become a valued member of village life and a support of the people in the small rural community. He added, the inevitable driving ban would prove difficult for him in an area with limited public transport links. Magistrate Ian Simpson told the defendant, you have done the right thing by pleading guilty and accepting responsibility. The bench imposed a 14-month driving ban, but the defendant was told he could reduce the length of the ban by a few months if he completes a drink driving awareness course. He was also fined £333 with a £133 statutory charge and £85 court costs totalling £551.
Public invited to view plans for 50 new homes in Sedgefield. According to the proposals, around 50 family homes could be built on the southeastern edge of Sedgefield, on land bordered by the A689 and Stockton Road. House builder Banks Homes is behind the development, which includes 20% affordable housing and a biodiversity net gain of at least 10%. Kate Culverhouse, Community Relations Manager at the Banks Group, said, our Sedgefield site offers excellent links both into and away from the town and would give more local people and families a greater opportunity to stay in the area. This will be a high-quality development in which we're looking to create sustainable contemporary living spaces, and we're confident that there will be strong demand for these new homes. Feedback from local people is essential in helping us finalise our development designs, and we hope to welcome as many people as possible to our forthcoming community event. A spokesperson said comments gathered will be considered as part of the planning application, which Banks Homes expect to submit to Durham County Council this winter. If approved, it is expected that construction would begin by summer 2027. The development would be accessed via a new junction on Stockton Road. all homes would feature alternative non-gas heating systems. Banks Homes, part of the County Durham headquartered Banks Group, is currently developing sites across the North East and Yorkshire, including West Rainton, Yarm and Hambleton. The company has also announced plans for around 75 homes in Redmarshall near Stockton and 80 homes in High Shincliffe near Durham City. To contact the project team, email sedgefield@banksgroup.co.uk. Further details about the proposed development are available at www.banksgroup.co.uk/Sedgefield.